everybody, and welcome to a different kind of Not the 92 podcast this week. It's myself, Armandor, who's covering it on his own today, seeing as Tom and Greg are both very busy this week. But we have plenty to talk about, and you're more or less going to get my opinion on the matters that are involved in the National League this week. But there's also scope for you guys to get involved in our debate, on my particular opinions, also on our general debate for when Tom does come back next week, on our Twitter feed and other special parameters like our email and Instagram, which I'll dip into shortly. But we have plenty to cover this week. Football, again, has been under quite a suspicious view in the last couple of weeks, particularly at National League level, with the changes in the league table and also in the boardroom being exacted as we speak. So there's a lot to cover, but you're only really going to hear my opinions about it today. Before we get going, I must obviously give a shout out to Moon Party for A Stranger Living in My Head, intro song to our podcast, and also to Farrelly Sports for supporting us with excellent kits, their excellent kit providing services, and also showing us what they're able to do when you give Greg Clark a nice pair of shirts to wear in your as part of propaganda to get yourself out there. But he displays them very well, does Greg. So at the very least, we have a very nice kit sponsor in our midst as well. So both of them are great supporters of the channel, and we are happy to have them on. So if you want to see what the Farrelly Sports can offer in terms of kits for all non-league size and attire that you guys could probably wear for your club next season, head over to the Farrelly Sports website. It will be in the link description below. It will also be the link to Moon Party on any of your preferred choice of music listening apps. Don't know, really. It was one of those jazzy things. Used to be cassettes back in the day. Now we just use, what is it, Spotify and Apple Music. It's unique, isn't it? But we must start with, obviously, the time that we've been off air in podcast weeks. We've obviously got to start with two moments of sad news. Obviously, both reflecting large-scale events in football, but also in our country. The first being, obviously, the sad passing, as of this time last week, as today is a Friday, of His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip, who passed away at the age of 99. He was a very staunch supporter of his better half, the Queen of England, Elizabeth II, and the nation was shocked last Friday afternoon to discover of the news of his passing at the near 100 mark, which is a great achievement for someone to have lived so long. But of course, his untimely death, never wished upon by anyone, I'm sure, will always be a matter of concern, and has affected football this weekend, which I will cover in a small period of time during this podcast. Another thing is obviously one that did shock National League football, was that no sooner after we released our show a couple of weeks ago was the sad and horrible passing of the Yeovil Town captain Lee Collins at the age of 32. He was found, unfortunately, dead in his hotel room, and we, under no circumstances, have any idea how this may have come about or what caused such a horrible thing to happen. It is allegedly along the lines of, you know, mental health and the player and Lee going through a tough time in his life mentally, not only just as a footballer but as a person. It was clear to see that he had little to nowhere to go in the regards of trying to find help, and decided that it wasn't right for him to continue life. And it shocked everybody in the world of football, including us here at Not the 92. Yeovil Town are a sadder place for it, because he was an excellent captain, played for many clubs in the Football League, likes of Northampton, Mansfield, had a stint at Forest Green Rovers as well. He has a fantastic record in his career, and to have lost such a great player, who just at the time of, obviously, of the news of his passing, was on the bench against Barnet, so he was about to return to the first team fold under Darren Sahl. And Yeovil have not played football matches since the announcement of his passing for 2 weeks now, so They were still coming to the terms of obviously what's happened. Lots of tributes were made to him at Huish Park and also to many football clubs in the league and above the National League as well, after hearing such horrible news. It was fantastic to see the outpouring, and we are so sad that he is no longer with us. So to all in connected to Lee Collins, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Lee, for a great footballing career. You will be sorely missed by everyone, and particularly us here at the Not the 92, who are huge fans, as we say, of the National League. We hope that Yeovil Town pay the best respect they can by finishing the season as strongly as possible. And as always, deepest condolences out to those who knew him and to his family as well. So, on to a more, hopefully, a little bit more of the controversial nature. I don't like to go from a negative to a controversial methods, but in the last couple of weeks, a lot of things have happened in the National League boardroom. And in particular, one of the biggest announcements, and more or less the one that have been called upon by many clubs following the debacle regarding finances and the treatment of National League and North and South clubs in the last couple of months, particularly since they stopped playing football this season, has been the decision of Brian Barwick to step down as chairman of the National League at the end of the season. He got some glowing statement from the National League, and for what it's worth, I don't get it, to be honest. I think it's one of those, you kind of have to look at it from outside in. Why are they paying tribute to a man who, despite running the league this season, hasn't been capable of solving many of the problems that National League North and South clubs have faced this year? And we've had many guests on the show who have played at such level. Obviously, most recently, Bertram, one of our Not the 92 extras, who called it nicely, saying that he's more jealous of the fact National League clubs are playing on this season instead of the fact that his club can't play because of the financial situation and also the non-guarantee at the start of the season that they would be continuing to receive money in the form of grants and not loans, which is what was proposed by the government to the National League. But the National League having ways around trying to save the season from not starting, promised clubs that there would be grants throughout the season, probably from the get-go. He oversaw the entire thing, and it ultimately led to him being ridiculed by many people, not only in the boardroom, but also by people who would soon step down, who would say very unflattering things about the National League board and how he's run it. So it obviously led to the resignations of Caroline Barker last year, Jim Parmenter, led to numerous clubs starting to protest against the decisions that the National League made against the clubs, particularly this season when it came to the handing out of the penalties for clubs who did not fulfill matches when the leagues were originally scheduled to restart. So the likes of 17 clubs have been fined and penalised sporting level to such a degree, it's harsh financially. The sporting penalties, in some cases, they're not so, it looks like clubs are not too fussed about the sporting penalties. It's more the financial burden that they're already having to face, and they would like more or less to have just one or the other rather than have both imposed on top of them, or when they're already suffering enough as it is. So it's a shame that, clubs have had to come to this point and start protesting against the National League board, forcing the chairman to resign and also leave his role at the end of the season. But also, it's seen a bit of a recent, in terms of recent news, a bit of a change. Mark Ives, who was temporary general manager of the National League, has also been appointed now on a permanent basis to the role, having been seen as an amicable person to run the league in this difficult period. Now, the one thing that has baffled a lot of us is who in the National League hierarchy would have, I know probably Brian Barwick is still running the league, but if it was him that made the decision to appoint him, then good on him. But also there's the element of how can he get this job without any real search for a proper replacement for each and every person who's looking to move on from the National League. How's there not been a proper job search for anyone like that? I'm sure HR would have been well, a good HR group would have found a more amicable person for the role. But it looks like they've gone with Mark Ives, and in the end, that's how they portray it. They think it's the right thing to do to encourage a more, you know, a more positive outlook for the league. It hasn't had a good look on itself this season, in particular with the sheer number of ridiculous issues they've had this year, managing fines, managing penalties that they're handing out to clubs, the fixtures all going awry, clubs refusing to play and rebelling against regulations this season. It hasn't been particularly kind to them, and in terms of the clubs, and it has given them a bad look in more ways than one. So in the end, it was more or less deserved that you more or less deserved to see why these clubs were angry with the nature of this ridiculous, you know, running of the league this season. Why it's led to Dorking and Maidstone starting these petitions and pushing forward to try and increase change in the National League, not just at their level in the North or the South, but also at the Premier Division level as well. Because also, you have to remember, this year there is no promotion or relegation with the season curtailed at Step 2, but FA have not ratified it yet. You also have another problem in the sense that in the National League, there's only 22 teams left. A few clubs won't be able to play matches this season. It could also affect the promotion race. So it has its problems. And you can sense the frustration of many managers, owners, players, all who are invested in the game, that are missing out on these opportunities. And it really does feel horrible for them to have sat here and just watched the National League continue, obviously under the cloud of the fact that they are playing with a lot of resentment from the league below. There's certainly a feeling that they would like, you know, a much more well-run league, and a league that can also be, you know, can be implemented properly with the rules, regulations, competent people as well, who can actually do their jobs and actually perform to a standard with sympathy for clubs, because the financial burden these clubs have been through the last 12 to 18 months now has been ridiculous. It's not just obviously before the pandemic. I'm sure clubs, while still getting fans in and seeing a level of, you know, stability currently going at the time, looking good and maybe even thinking ahead about starting new projects, having had this difficulty of the COVID-19 pandemic starting to manifest itself in the last 12 or so months in particular, they've started to see heavy, heavy, heavy shortfalls and big losses in their financial income. And no fans in particular, where the fans are priceless in any sense, no matter how much money they invest in the game, that is important as anything to non-league football. It's not the same without them, and I personally believe that it's a shame that they have not been able to help clubs, especially in the dire needs. Thankfully, with the restrictions easing, there is opportunity now for clubs to start having open up their bars again, outdoors of course, open up their bars and have fans come in, add a buck or two, try and get some income into the club so that they can start preparing for next season, or even to pay some bills such as the floodlights. Some grounds don't have floodlights, so they more or less play games in the daytime. But if they do, they'll pay for bills like those, or internet bills, maybe even just the fact that, you know, players are short on a certain amount of wage while being furloughed. So there's a lot of difficult scenarios being drawn up here currently in the National League's top division. But the board being reshuffled, I hope, and the chairman stepping down may have a huge role to play in the future of this of the National League being hopefully a positive one. And in the shortfall, the appointment of Mark Ives hasn't been seen as an overwhelming change to proceedings just yet. But what we hope for now is to see what happens if things do get better. We could see what happens in the next few months, maybe at the end of the season or beyond. We will find out if it will be successful or not. Well, so let's now talk about a couple of managerial changes that have taken place in the last couple of weeks that have, or maybe more or less one, but one of the changes is related to their form recently, and it's one I wanted to highlight very quickly. Let's start, of course, with the decision from Barnet a few weeks ago to let go of Tim Flowers while they're still languishing at the bottom of the league. And, you know, clubs are still wondering if they'll get their, you know, their gimmies from them this season. Well, this time around, they've asked for Simon Bassi and Dave Anderson to take hold of the club by the reins and hopefully save their buck from being the wooden spoon this season. Remember, there's no relegation in the National League this year, but they would be seen as the team to be ridiculed as they are bottom of it at the moment. And in more cases than one, have been seen as the team's whipping boys this season, conceding almost a large amount of goals, probably the worst in the National League, in fact, and having three different managers now, with Bassi and Anderson taking charge at this point of the year. Bassi takes over after being Wimbledon's coach for a long time, and he did oversee some measurable success for the Donnies. For the Dons, in particular recently, having been a part of their coaching staff when they won in the FA Cup, got promotion through the playoffs in League 2, and have been in a League 1 club for a long, long time, and also for a little while before his sacking was due to be able to help them move into Plough Lane as a coach as well, and manager as well. But in the end, didn't work out for him at Wimbledon. So he's bringing his experience from that level down to this one, and we'll see if it brings success. The other two are ones that are obviously high-profile changes in the National League. The first one, obviously, was Andy Woodman after Neil Smith was sacked following defeat to Sutton earlier in March. Now, Andy Woodman came in and didn't have the easiest of starts for Bromley, but since then, he's seen them come up with two wins in a row in the National League in his first four games in charge, and he's certainly starting to build a very good squad there. A very good unit there. The team is doing well, even though there's still the same players that are under Neil Smith. They do a good job. Sheik still scores goals. Williams is playing a big part in that team. Jack Bridges has become an emergence in that Bromley side, and he's certainly playing a huge part in their recent form, particularly in midweek after their fantastic 4-3 win against Woking. And it is starting to look like now they are on the rebound as they look to recover from their little patch where they struggled a little throughout the earlier parts of March into the period when Neil Smith left the club. They're starting to look like a team that are ready to fight for the playoffs, but it's looking a bit tricky for them at the moment. The most, obviously, the high-profile one, and it's clear to see, is Ian Burstrow and Maurice Ross, friend of the show, who are at Notts County. At the moment, Notts County are not looking particularly good. While they have the most games in hand in the National League, particularly after their 2-2 draw with Yeovil, which led to Neil Eiley being let go as manager of the Magpies, there has been a large amount of worry as to whether Burstrow could keep the team's motivation going and if they were able to progress under him in the next few games, particularly as they're with their massive advantage aiming to get into the promotion places. Well, at the moment, having seen them through a very tough period of after losing to Aldershot, we mentioned that on the podcast last, the back-to-back wins against Wrexham and Woking brought them within some touching distance, but now have gone of the playoffs and also securing their spot. But now they've gone on two straight defeats to Hartlepool when they've got injuries to Callum Roberts, who went that fourth down to 10 men after using all three of their substitutes, losing 2-0 as well, away from home against a team that at home are very, very good, and away from home to Solihull Moors, where they did take the lead through Jimmy Knowles, but went down to two late goals in the match. Their hopes of staying in the promotion are just ebbing away ever so slightly. They are currently with the four game in hand advantage they have on Hartlepool, who currently top the division. They are 12 points behind them, and also have probably not the greatest goals conceded rate. 29 goals this season have been put through their net, and shows that while they have been great in attack on some days, they've been very bad at the back. And it seems that the start, four defeats in their first six games in charge, it doesn't have a good look on them at the moment for Burstrow or for Maurice Ross, despite the challenges that Neil Ali's left behind, he'll have a wry smile somewhere saying, well, he shouldn't have sacked me because I definitely had the potential to take this team one step further. And if anything, that it just doesn't make any sense to why they are, why they let him go, the two Danish owners. It should have made much more sense to see him through the season and hope that he can carry them on to the playoffs and maybe strengthen them further to get them back to Wembley. If they could have got promotion, they would have had to be perfect, but clearly they're not perfect right now, and it is going to be a hard nut to crack. But they have more games than anyone in the top seven left to play, so they still have a chance of closing the gap on Hartlepool, who don't get to play as many games now. It's not really in their own hands anymore until we see what happens with their rivals around them. But in the short term, it is a tough nut to crack for Birchnell and for Ross. They will have to pick up form sooner rather than later, because the Danish owners took a risk bringing them in with their experience in Scandinavian football, well known obviously to many who are fans in Sweden of Östersund. Does, however, seem though that he's just not finding he's finding national level just a little tricky at the beginning, but we'll see how he progresses in the next few games as well. Now it's time to gloss over what's happened in this week's National League. And in the last couple of weeks since we've been off the air, there have been a lot of developments in the promotion race and in the playoffs in particular. But more or less, it's been about Sutton United the last couple of weeks. Sutton went into our last podcast leading the race and by a comfortable margin. But, however, after a draw against Halifax and now succeeding that, two straight draw 0-0 draws against Bournemouth and Chesterfield was like a long time ago. They beat them 1-0 earlier in the year. That was probably one of their best wins of the season, mind. But one of their successes this season has been being consistent away from home and not losing and gaining clean sheets. Well, a draw to Bournemouth and a result against Solihull Moors as well, which in contrast to my different matches where they weren't so good against Bournemouth, but were just a little bit not better against Solihull Moors. Should have had a penalty in that game as well. They were hard done by that day by the referee. All of those considered, they were looking okay. But the problem they had with drawing too many games was the chasing pack. Obviously, Torquay United had started winning goal games late on as a brand new habit recently. Not more so evidently with victories against Weymouth, Wrexham, and this week against Sutton in the last few minutes of matches to not only close the gap at the top of the National League to within a point once it was about 12, especially with Sutton's games in hand, it's now a very tight battle for the one promotion spot at the top of the National League. Hartlepool took that spot up last week with a victory against Notts County and following up from another win last week as well. They are really the team to beat at the moment, now on a 14-match unbeaten run. After wins against Dagenham, a draw against Bournemouth when they were 2-1 down, had Ben Killett pick up an injury which ended the goalkeeper's season permanently, which is a shame obviously for them because he has been a very solid goalkeeper for them this season. That victory against Notts County put them top of the league with Sutton not playing last week. Their match would have been against Dover, but obviously the results expunged and future matches were never going to be fulfilled. So all that being considered, it led to happening. So they have taken the lead in the National League race. So I'm very, very sure we're going to have a very strong and competitive finish to the National League this season. In particular, Torquay's result on Tuesday at Sutton in a big 6-pointer for promotion has now given them a chance. Gary Johnson's side have obviously had a habit of winning games super late on recently, and to be honest with you, I can't blame them for doing so. They've looked like a great pack, and they're starting again now to find their form and encourage teams to come over, try and play your best, but they'll ping balls around and overload the wings a lot. And that's what Gary Johnson has been really imposing on his side. They've not been playing very well, but to just get out of there and pick up the points has been the most important thing. They were long-time leaders this season before struggling in a emphatic fashion, losing to Altrincham, Halifax at home in front of the BT cameras, in the trophy to Woking to rivals Hartlepool, who obviously with that victory started to springboard their promotion chase, drawing to Boreham Wood, losing 4-1 to Torquay, then recovering their season with now got a fantastic run of results. 6 matches where they've won, the one anomaly being a defeat to dagger them away from home. But the funniest thing with this is the 4 matches they've recently played with Woking, Wrexham, Weymouth and Sutton, all of those goals have come after the 80th minute. They are really giving it a go right to the very end. It's a Hall scoring in midweek as well for Torquay with a great diving header. Kept up that trend of late winners for the Devon side. So things at Playmore are starting to look on the up again, and there's a hope that they'll start to close that gap in terms of hopefully being able to overhaul Sutton and Hartlepool to regain a top spot that they held onto for a very long time this season. In regards to Sutton, as I said, obviously, their 3 draws, not very good. Losing their unbeaten run as well this week to Torquay. There have been no murmurs of any kind, other than obviously what Matt said after Tuesday night, saying that it does hurt that they lost and in such a nature, but both sides played very well in some areas, and he felt that they could have improved a little bit more in the chances on the night. But overall, Sutton haven't scored in 275 minutes. It's not particularly good looking at the moment. You do need to improve their goal scoring, hopefully sooner rather than later. They used to be scoring goals on free for all throughout this season without any remorse for the opposition they were playing against. But they've hit that little, you know, patch now where they're not finding the net as frequently as they like to, and they are starting to drop more points. While it is good to stay unbeaten and you avoid, you know, losing games, trying to pick up 1 point here, 1 point there, and, you know, not get... you need a bit of luck as well to keep drawing games when rivals don't win or don't pick up the key victories they need to against each other. You then start to look at yourselves and think, well, what you need to improve a little bit more on our goal scoring, and if they're able to actually push on to finishing first this season, they've really got to improve and improve quickly. As for Torquay, I just said, obviously, 4 wins in a row now, all of them in the last 10 minutes. And they don't have a game this weekend, but they're certainly going to be keen to pick up where they left off against Woking away from home on Tuesday night in a game in hand for them, whereas Hartlepool and Sutton cannot do anything about it. To the playoff race, Stockport County are currently holding that down with aplomb, but they're also sniffing at Torquay's third place. Currently 5 points behind, the Summer Rust side have had a decent recovery as of late. 5 games in which they've not lost, and in particular, a key draw against Hartlepool, which in the time of considering the result, wasn't such a bad result. But they followed up with a victory against Aldershot and a thumping 3-0 win away to promote rivals Wrexham, which more or less damaged the Welsh team side of being able to close the gap on the teams above them. And then they followed up on Tuesday with a 4-0 crunching of Kings Lynn. Kings Lynn, who will be in front of the BT cameras tomorrow when they play against Halifax. Chesterfield have been also in great form recently in their last 5 of 4 straight wins until their 0-0 draw away to Boreham Wood, who are the draw specialists in the league this season. They've certainly been improving a lot under James Rowe, and it's clear to see he's not letting up on their playoff hopes. They're going to be a difficult team to compete against when the playoffs do start, but if they just cement their position, I think they'll be a very, very difficult team to play against, away from home in particular, at the Technique Stadium. James Rowe's made that place a formidable ground in recent weeks, and he's certainly giving teams a hard time whenever they turn up there. There's not been many except have beaten them. Sutton were the last side this year to beat them at their ground by 1-0, and it was when they were scoring goals and feeling the vibes a bit of what could be later this season. Obviously, matches have come and gone since then, and Chesterfield have just been on the bounce, winning to Barnet, Aldershot, Weymouth, Eastleigh and Kings Lynn. Their draw against Bromwell, as I said, was the anomaly, but they're still in the comfortable position, having been mid-table for a while in February and then bounced right back up the league into the playoff hunt. So it's a fantastic recovery from them. Wrexham, we saw them get absolutely walloped by Stockport County last week. They responded with an equally incredible victory away at Halifax in midweek by 4-0, in which Jordan Davis scored a hat-trick A terrific performance from him, and with the fact they don't have any strikers that are fit enough to start. Particelli got injured against Notts County, and Kwame Thomas also had an injury before that game, which ended his season. They've had a difficult period getting a long-term striker up front. Dio Angus does a good job in the team, but he can't do this all by himself. So Since Thomas and Potter's injury, Davies taken the mantle, and he went up to Halifax and absolutely let one grip, scoring three in incredible fashion in the first half in the 35-minute spell for his three goals. And Dio Angus also added to the score sheet, which embarrassed Pete Wild's side. This is after three straight defeats for Wrexham, which has affected their promotion hunt, but they're still looking modestly at the playoffs, and who knows what may happen. They've also received a £100,000 Welsh Government grant to support them, obviously, with various matters in the club, and also for the fact that they are not eligible at the time to receive National League grants. But really, they're not too worried financially now. Obviously, the big Hollywood takeover has subsided them for a long time now, and they'll be perfectly all right for, who knows, maybe many months to come, maybe years, as long as McElhenney and Reynolds treat it with a little bit of tender, loving care. That's all you really need to care about. And once again, this is a big call to Reynolds and McElhenney. If one of you two has stopped doing your filming business, we'd love you to come on our podcast as soon as possible, because we've got a lot of imposingly grilling questions we would like to ask you about football in this country. Like the one you throw with Pigskin. Well, that one with Pigskin. Nah, this one where we kick it with our feet and try and score goals. That's the plan around here. But yeah, we are still pleading for them to come on. It's been a very, very exciting period for the National League. And one thing's for sure, we're definitely biting our fingernails at the prospects of what could come from this year. But don't take your eyes off of the top 7, top 10 in the league now. We're looking at probably the 10 teams that are currently occupying those spots to be in the hunt for the playoff race. But anything can happen between now and the end of the season, and we've still got plenty of football to be played. Sutton have the easiest running, in our opinion, combined, I'm sure, because they don't have the highest number teams to play. I think the only tough games they have left in their remaining matches are to Notts County and at home to Hartlepool. So outside of that, they're playing teams that are around the more mid-ish areas in the National League. So if there are opportunities for them to pick up points, now is that time. And if they can get a good run going where their teams above them start to struggle, or if Hartlepool do slip up and drop points, that's their best opportunity. Compared to Torquay Hartlepool, who have to play the likes of Stockport, the likes of Chesterfield before the end of the season, things are a little bit tougher, but who knows how things will go. And we have to remember, Sutton and Hartlepool meet on the penultimate day of the season. That's Hartlepool's last game of the season, because they can't play on the final day as it would have been against Dover. So unless they find a game on the last day of the season, they're going to be sitting in Hartlepool, fingers crossed that Sutton don't get a result against Barnet, or Torquay get a result on the last day of the season, away from home, if I'm not mistaken, against Altrincham. So, I'll give Star of the Week this week, because it's not much we've been able to do in terms of viewing points, but it's got to go to Jordan Davies, because he stole the show in the National League this week with the hat-trick of hat-tricks away from home against Halifax Town to really cement Wrexham's hopes of being in the playoffs. They're currently holding down to 7th place thanks to him, and that will harm a lot of the harm the hopes of the Shaman just a little bit more, having been walloped so badly by Davies' hat-trick. That's it from me. I hope that you've enjoyed this particular podcast. But from me, it's a great thank you to all of you for joining us today. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please, as always, give us a follow on the good old method you listen to the podcast on, Spotify or Apple. I don't know. Too much technology spiel nowadays. One of those. Acast, we're there everywhere. Whatever you listen to, we're there. That's what you need to know. We also have our Twitter feed, obviously, NT92Pod. That's where you'll find all of our tweets regarding NAN League, our opinions on it, and guests for future NT92 podcasts. We had Danny Granger on this week in the NT92 Extra, former Hearts player. He's a manager now as well. If you want to find out more about what's up with him, Greg Clark spoke to him this week. Also, NT92_pod, if you want to find us on Instagram. But for me, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you sticking with us for as long as the pod's been. It's a weird way to make it this week. It may sound a little bit better, but we'll definitely be in the same Zoom call next week. That's guaranteed. And a bit more normality will be shared. I'm off to the gym. And until next week, everyone, if you don't know now, now you know. Take care, everyone. I'll see you very soon.